As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This is Issues 2021. I'm Steve McIntosh. Our guest is Joan Tammany, Executive Director of ComCare of Sedgwick County. Welcome to Issues 2021. Joan, nice to have you with us.
Oh, appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for inviting me.
We want to focus on the pandemic's impact on people's mental health today, but let's begin with a basic question. What is ComCare of Sedgwick County?
ComCare is the community mental health center here in Sedgwick County. So we're a safety net clinic that treats anybody from zero to death, who has insurance, who doesn't have insurance, who may be underinsured and uninsured. We provide comprehensive wraparound support services to our community.
How is ComCare funded? Is it completely Sedgwick County?
No. We get the bulk of our funding is fee-for-service, so we deliver services to people with insurance and Medicaid or Medicare, and we get reimbursed that way. We also get significant funding from the state to treat the under and uninsured. And then we have a variety of different grants that help sustain some of our services. And then we do get some funding directed toward some of our services like crisis and our offender assessment program from the county. So lots of variety of funding sources.
So now how long have you been with ComCare?
Well, I've been with ComCare in a variety of roles since 1999.
Really? What did you do before that?
Before that, I worked in leadership positions in several other states, doing mental health and substance abuse work.
Okay. And how many employees does ComCare have?
Well, we have, let's talk about the two different pieces. So we have about 500 positions, but presently we have about 380 employees.
Okay. Has the COVID pandemic forced you to cut any staff?
We have not eliminated any positions, but COVID has been life-changing for everybody, including our workforce, and some have elected to pursue other careers as a result of their living through the pandemic.
Wow. Okay. Anybody working from home?
Yeah, well, we have hybrid workforce, so we have some nobody's working fully from home. In the height of the pandemic, we had some staff working full-time from home, but our staff work between the office and maybe some work a few days a week from home doing telehealth.
And so that's the pandemic's had. Just can tell us basically, overall, the pandemic, what kind of impact has it had on you and your folks there at ComCare?
Yeah, it's had a tremendous impact. You know, prior to COVID, we did very little telehealth work, believing that persons preferred to be seen in person in the community. We still believe seeing people in the community is pivotal. But as a result of the pandemic, we had to make decisions around safety for our staff and safety for our patient population. And so last March, we moved from all in-person services to full telehealth for many, many months due to the spread of the pandemic, and that kept our workforce safe. It kept our patients safe, and we learned a lot. Our patients and our staff like telehealth. So going forward, we anticipate having a hybrid mix of services to best meet individual patient needs.
All right. Now, a few of my male friends in the 50 to 70 age bracket, I won't be too specific, but recently chatting with some of the guys, they've admitted to some pretty strong negative feelings, maybe even anxiety or depression in recent months because of the pandemic, I guess. But is this common for guys my age during this pandemic?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think we've seen an increase of anxiety and depression across all age spectrums. But, you know, routine is really important for people. And people in the 50 to 70 age range are usually out and about, and connections are really pivotal for them. And not being able to have that same degree of personal connection has a huge impact on how you experience the world. It's also the population that was being really heavily hit with hospitalizations. And so there was a lot of fear and anxiety that came with that. So I think it is a common experience for that age group, but I think it's a common experience for all age groups during COVID.
You make a good point there. That is what we do at our age, like to be in our routines and our comfort zones. And this thing has been almost disastrous for anybody who likes to do it the same way we did it yesterday, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, as we age, what becomes more important? It's not the materialistic things. It's the people. It's the connections you have with others. It's feeling the feeling of having friends and long-lasting relationships. And all of that's been disrupted in different ways for different people.
Now, you say you've seen increases in people of all ages and genders seeking help during the pandemic. Is that correct, Ann?
Well, let me clarify. Okay. I indicated that anxiety and depression is impacting all age groups. I will say our experience and that of many of our peer organizations across the country have seen a decline in people asking for help. So people are suffering and people are experiencing high degrees of distress and anxiety and thoughts of negativity, but they're not necessarily reaching out for the help. So this conversation is really important because, you know, there is help and there is support if people want it and need it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to differentiate the volume of distress in our communities versus the volume of people accessing services.
Now, have you seen increases in people? Do you have one or two age groups that seem to be most affected by this pandemic?
No, I can't say particularly that there's a specific age group. You know, we have a heavy focus on children's services. You know, we have school programming, and it's been really important to find new ways to reach that age group during the pandemic because many people weren't attending school. So getting those folks connected with services has been a little trickier, but we've put a lot of emphasis on staying connected with school leadership and the counselors in the individual schools in our district. But that's just one population. We've also had a group of individuals in their, I would say, anywhere from 25 to maybe 40 who have kind of hunkered down and have not been coming in for services that we've had to outreach in creative ways through individual handwritten postcards, to repeated phone calls, to trying to stop by their house now that the community is opening up, trying to reach them because they haven't really been accessing services that we know they desperately need. So I can't say that there's a particular age group that's been more impacted than another or who we've tried to outreach in a more meaningful way. It's been across the whole age range.
I had a disturbing experience. I've got twin granddaughters who are 14 years of age.
Uh-huh.
And they had gotten wind of a couple of suicides recently of young people in their age group. And it had a real impact on them. You know, these are just, as I understand it, like eighth or ninth grade girls that committed suicide. And it, That's tragic. I mean, is that part of the thing that's going on?
Well, you know, we're hearing and reading that the suicide rate amongst young adolescents and young adults has gone up. I will say, locally, we know people are suffering, but we haven't seen a transition or a large increase in suicides, which is a blessing. But that doesn't mean that people aren't suffering, you know, and that's the tragic piece, is there is help available. But it, you know, among the particular age group that you're asking about is the 14, 15, 16 year olds. You know, we do worry that if one person takes their life, that it becomes an option for others who are struggling. So again, I just want, for anybody listening out there, is if any behavioral changes are occurring in your youth, or if they're starting to isolate, it's never too early to call for help.
It's good. Should we go ahead and pitch the crisis hotline right now, 24 hours? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, we have a community crisis center that's available to anybody in our community 24/7, 365 days a year. We got caring folks that answer the phone lines, who are there to provide some guidance or assistance or support, whatever the need may be. That number is 660-7500. If people want to walk in or come see us in person, we're at 635 North Main. It really is a place to just get support, and that's really necessary in this time. I can't underscore the importance of reaching out for help, because without reaching out for help, many people feel isolated and alone and as if there aren't the same choices that we know there are. You know, suicidal thoughts can linger over time, but the instinct to act on that, the impulse to act, is usually temporary and short-term in nature. So knowing that there's resources out there to help, listening and watching your friends and your neighbors who may be distressed, is just really pivotal, because if we can get them through that moment, the likelihood of them improving the quality of life is high.
You're listening to Issues 2021 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Joan Tammany, Executive Director of ComCare of Sedgwick County. I want to just stay with the suicide for just a little bit longer. When should we take our own thoughts of suicide as being serious enough to call somebody? Is there a special button that you hear or see?
Well, that differs per individual. But if you're spending more time thinking about negative thoughts than positive thoughts, if you're not future oriented, that's the time to start thinking about calling for help. If your behavior has changed and you're staying in your room more, or are thinking that, you know, nobody needs me around, I'm a burden, that's too late, because you're already pretty deep into the thoughts of self-harm or possible suicide. So, you know, if you're starting to feel down and your lifestyle is changing, and I know that's different today than it was a year ago before this pandemic, because many people are still not going out, but if your thoughts are starting to become negative in terms of your value in this world, call immediately.
And what about, I think you touched on this briefly, but what should we watch for in others who are close to us that may be the warning signs, if you will?
Yeah, you're looking at somebody who is talking, not having a lot of hopeful thoughts or comments that they're making that, again, are focused on the pain in the moment versus what their life could be like in the future. You know, you got the traditional things that often aren't seen, like giving things away, or, you know, we hear often from family members who have lost a loved ones, and they say, you know, I just didn't see all of that. So you're really just looking for changes in behavior, and it could be somebody who's starting to drink more or using drugs when they didn't use them in the past. You're talking about somebody who may have lost their job and feel like they'll never get another one. It could be somebody who's quit their job because they're no longer finding joy in it. It's any change of behavior, and it could be very subtle. So you need to think about what it was maybe a month ago versus what it is now, because it's not always very obvious. You know, there's a lot of shame attached to somebody who's struggling with a mental health issue. There shouldn't be. This is no different than having diabetes or heart disease. But there's a lot of shame attached to it, and there's a lot of stigma attached to it. So looking for help, asking for help often isn't there. So it is pivotal that family and friends be on the lookout for others.
That was one of my questions. You got to it before I could get to it. But then again, a little bit more about the stigma that some people feel in seeking help for mental problems. First of all, if they do, everything's confidential. I mean, it's not going to be broadcast to the world. But what else can you say about that stigma? Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you think about diabetes, nobody really has shame about going to a doctor to be treated for diabetes, and yet mental health is one of those issues where people don't reach out for help. And it's because it's seen as a character flaw or a personal deficit, and it's not. It's a brain disease. One that is not something that you ask to have any more than you ask to be born with heart disease or, you know, breathing issues or anything else of that nature. It's a chronic illness for many. It will stick around for a long time, but that doesn't mean that your quality of life has to be negative all the time any more than if you treated your diabetes. You know, you can get that under control and feel like you're doing well. I just really worry that, you know, we don't take this serious enough. You know, the reality is physical health impacts emotional health, and emotional health impacts physical health. So the longer somebody struggles with an emotional health issue, the more likely that person is to develop chronic long-term physical health disease. And the longer somebody has a physical health disease, the more likely they are to experience an emotional reaction to being sick. So they're interconnected. They're not separated. They're both part of who we are physically. So talking about stigma, I just can't underscore enough the importance of people to start aligning emotional health the same way they look at physical health and get treated for it. Early intervention is so important. You know, it's tragic for us as healthcare providers, too, when somebody is to the point where they think their life isn't worth living. And we want to be here prior to that thought process happening.
Again, repeating the 24-hour crisis hotline is 660-7500. Let's talk about some other ComCare services. Tell me about addiction treatment services.
Yeah, we are one of many substance abuse service agencies here in the Wichita and Sedgwick County area. We provide intake and referral, and we also deliver group and individual therapy for people who are struggling with a substance use disorder. And just like mental health, there is a brain component to substance use and addiction. So I think the same pieces that we talked about before with stigma around mental health need to apply to those who are struggling with an addiction. And not only addiction to substances like alcohol and other drugs, but gambling addiction is a really important aspect of the work we do as well. We know that oftentimes people with a gambling addiction don't seek help until their life has spiraled out of control and they've lost almost anything, I mean everything in their life. And how sad that somebody thinks that help isn't available before that point. So again, looking out for your loved ones and those you know, make them aware that there is treatment available in the community. And just like mental health, the privacy aspects of substance use treatment is there. Our goal is to try to make your life better, not make it more complicated. I don't want people to wait until they get arrested for something related to their substance use and addiction either. Come before that happens, and that way you're taking control of your life and taking the step away from stigma and recognizing that it too is a brain disorder.
Talk about your outpatient services. What is that?
Well, outpatient services is anything from coming in and talking about what's going on in your life and being screened for risk and service recommendations to individual therapy with a qualified mental health clinician who has a master's degree to if people meet eligibility, we have case managers who help you navigate symptom management in the community, help teach coping skills, practice navigating the community. You know, a lot of people with a severe emotional disturbance have trouble getting on public transportation. We'll help with that. So it's a variety of different services. It could be medication management services with one of our advanced registered practitioners or a psychiatrist to supplement talk therapy. So it's a whole range of different services. Group work is really important. I know it's hard for people to talk about their issues in a group setting, but there's nothing more rewarding than being in a group of people who share your experience and you learn from one another.
Do you, you may have touched on this before, if you have, that's fine, but do you do any family counseling, take a whole family in?
You know, we do. We have, thank you for bringing that up. We have a large children's program, and oftentimes it's the emotional needs of a child that bring a family to services, but you're not treating the child in isolation. You know, the child is a product of a larger family unit, so we do have the availability of family therapy and couples counseling and all those things as well. Although we don't do a ton of couples therapy, but we do a lot of family work.
Mm-hmm. Law enforcement people are telling me that the people they're seeing are seeing an increase in the number of people with drug and mental challenges on the street being confronted, as you know, and people who probably shouldn't be on the street or in jail. Do we need more facilities in Sedgwick County to deal with that kind of situation?
You ask a really complex question.
Oh, sorry.
No. And I know not in terms of could we benefit from more service. Of course we can benefit from more service. But the needs of people, you know, you talk about homelessness, you talk about mental health, you talk about substance use, and when you have all of those coming together at once, it's a complex patient at that point, and their needs are pretty significant. So there is need. The reality is there's not very many safety net providers in the community. So there's lots of private practitioners that will work with people who have insurance or an ability to pay out of pocket for example, talk therapy with a master's degree clinician. We have a lot of service providers who also treat people who live in poverty or have no insurance, but it tends to be siloed. So there's not a lot of comprehensive service agencies in our community. That's where community mental health centers come in. We're statutorily obligated, and it's a privilege to treat this population as a whole person. So, you know, there's not a lot of funding for that mission-driven work. So, there's need for additional services. Where we're lacking is critical to our community is medical detox without having to go into a hospital, inpatient substance abuse services or residential substance abuse services. I mean, your wait time to get into one of those facilities could be 6 to 12 weeks or longer. And, you know, if somebody comes in asking for help today, the likelihood of them staying clean and sober until they can get to a residential treatment center in 12 weeks is just nearly impossible. So we definitely have not only regional need, but we have statewide need when it comes to that higher level of care where somebody can literally step away from their life for a period of time and focus on recovery.
Joan, I can see some of the challenges or many of the challenges of job of your job and what you do every day, but what's a good part? What really gets you going about coming to work every day?
Oh, there is no greater privilege than people taking us into their lives and trusting us enough to work with them on their road to recovery, be it from their mental health issues or their substance abuse issues. I mean, that takes a lot of courage for somebody to step through our doors. And for me, the fact that people step through our doors every day, although we know our community, there's more people that can step through our doors to address their needs. But I mean, what a privilege. That's the rewarding piece. And to see people go from desperation to getting a job again and socializing with friends. I mean, those things are just intangibly rewarding.
Well, we appreciate your time this morning. And just to say that there's a pandemic on and maybe you've been having some dark thoughts and whatnot. But again, don't be afraid to reach out and get some help. ComCare is a place where you can get some help pretty quickly there. 660-7500 is their hotline. Hey, listen, thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it, Joan.
And we'll thank you, Steve.
Hope to talk to you again real soon. Our guest this week is Joan Tammany, Executive Director of ComCare of Sedgwick County. That's all for this edition of Issues 2021. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.